This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Right now is one of the most important times in the 26-year history of Joy. Times are tough financially, but that will never stop us delivering powerful, meaningful and uplifting radio for you. To get ready for the future, we're launching Joy Nation and we need your support to do it. So help Joy by asking your workmates, your next door neighbour, your mum, your dad, your siblings and of course your friends. Go to joy.org.au and make a donation to build Joy Nation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday 10 till 12.
You're listening to Paul and Macca here on Joy 94.9. This is Saturday Magazine. Macca, our next guest this morning is going to be John Pazuzzo. So just give me 1 minute. I'm going to have a quick chat to John and I'll bring you back in just 1 moment.
So, we're just getting John Pazuzzo on the phone. Now, John is the former member for Hawthorn, and he famously or infamously actually found out he'd lost his seat during the election broadcast of the state election result. I think it was on the ABC. He was very, very gracious that night, and we've had him on a number of times since then. John is not in the Parliament now, but he's still active in the Liberal Party, and he is a consultant out in the community. And we're going to speak to John about, first off, good morning, John. How are you?
G'day, Macca. G'day, everyone.
So, first off, how are you coping, mate? It's interesting times. It's tough times. How are you coping?
Look, well, I've got a kind of a motto that I used to operate by when I was a poly, and I sort of continued it on. Whenever you've got to do something, I used to think of words that would sort of signify what it was that I wanted to achieve. What I've been saying to my kids and anyone I speak to is, you know, let's be responsible, let's be strong, and let's be hopeful. So I'm sticking to that, and I feel good despite the challenges. I'm healthy, touch wood. And so far, the family is doing well. How about all of you?
Look, basically, Joy, other than breakfast during the weekend drive and Saturday Magazine, every other show on Joy is being done remotely, a lot of cases pre-recorded, sometimes live. We've done that to reduce the potential for any transmission. We have to look after each other and each day. At Joy, there is a duty manager who's in the building, who's in the station in the event something happens. We need to cut into broadcast or... So each day someone is doing that. You'll laugh, I'm that responsible person today.
Goodness knows why they put you in charge of the lunatic asylum, Macca.
I know. But, you know...
You'll do a good job. This will be the making of you, Macca.
Oh, thanks, mate.
You're going to sustain us through this trying time.
Look, it's really interesting because it's so important. Joy is so important to so many people. And just before I came back on air, I had a Joy member ring up. I actually had to dash out and answer the phone just to say thank you for being on air. It's so important, you know, to continue to be on air, to give people information. A good friend of this station, a good friend of mine, Neil Mitchell, he's been broadcasting remotely from Flinders. I think his producer, Heidi, she's on 3RW this morning. I think she might be doing it remotely. We have to continue to do this because people need a source of information and hopefully a source of valid and truthful information. And for our community, for the LGBTI community, it's really important that we stay on air.
So, John,
I couldn't agree more, Macca.
John, I was just coming on to the questions. What's actually going on behind the scenes? Give us a quick rundown of, from your view inside the political machine about what might be going on.
I think it is a 24/7 operation. There'll be a lot of people who are not getting any sleep, or if they are, it's 2 or 3 hours a night. And I'd say that not just federal politicians and officials and medical and other experts, but at a state level as well. The government's come out at a state level this morning with an important economic announcement. So they'd be working around the clock. And I think the challenging thing that, you know, I'd make this point about is that what we need at times like this, and it picks up on the point you were just talking about, Macca, is we need to be sustained, and a lot of things sustain us. So it's the comfort that programs like yours and other things will give to people at this time when they're feeling anxiety. And what people are also looking for is that kind of strength in our leaders. And I think one of the difficult things for leaders is in a time like this that you can't predict what's coming around the corner. So although we do our best to try and forecast what's going to happen, we forecast how many transmissions are we likely to see with social distancing in place, what kind of stimulus measures are going to actually work. We try our best to forecast those things, but we can't get it nearly right because we just don't know what's going to happen. So I think, you know, what I'd say in answer to your question is there's just a lot of, I think, constant revising of figures and forecasts and impacts of measures that the government's taking. And that's going to be really hard for those people. They'll be under enormous stress, as much as all of us in the community are feeling it. Can you imagine if you've got the weight of not only the country, the weight of the world on your shoulders?
I have. I can't. And in terms of things quickly evolving, John, so just breaking, the exemption for Crown Casino has been revoked by the Chief Medical Officer.
Good.
Good. They, yeah, exactly. They will need to comply with the rules that are in place for all venues. I did say during the week that I couldn't understand why they were given an exemption, and I go back to what Lewis Hamilton said before the Grand Prix. Cash is king. And that for some reason they were given an, you know, they were given an exemption. Anyway, it's been removed now, so they're going to have to comply with those rules, which is really important. I wanted to ask you, John, you're a consultant now, and I know I'm your campaign manager for getting you back in Parliament, so you can always blame me for that. but as a consultant out there, what are people telling you? How is the nature of not just how you're doing your work, but the sort of work you're doing changed?
It's big, and we don't know the full extent of it. And I guess we look with a great deal of trepidation at what the next available set of national and state accounts are going to reveal. But obviously the level of fear is palpable, but it's also going to change the way we work in ways that we're not going to return to once we come through this, is my prediction on that. And I say that with all the caveats that you put on these things, but I think for a number of reasons. One, even when we get beyond this, and we will get beyond this, when we get beyond this, I think some of the lessons about even just basic things like how often we wash our hands and how vigilantly we think about our own interaction with other people is going to have an impact on whether we need face-to-face meetings, that kind of social interaction. That will have an impact on the way people work. But also, I think people are going to discover that you can actually get a lot of work done without necessarily meeting with other people. And in terms of basic efficiencies of the way businesses in particular operate, but not only businesses, all different organisations in the NGO sector and across the board, they're going to discover those efficiencies. But I do wonder whether there are going to be impacts that arise out of the fact that we're not perhaps meeting with each other as often as we used to. And they're going to be some big impacts. So the way people are going to be doing work is going to change even more. And that's a constantly evolving thing, but this is going to kick it along tenfold.
One of the things, I think humour is really important in the current environment. And, you know, you like me and others, we're doing a lot of video conferencing and stuff like that. What we need to realise is when people are looking at us, they're seeing what's in the room we're in. So you need to make sure that the view that people have is things that you want them to see.
Yeah.
and, you know, I don't have a problem with the greyhound wandering across the back of the room and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But it's, you know, I've seen some funny things in the last week on video conferences. We think back to that, I think that BBC moment where the small child burst into the room while the reporter was talking about something really, really,
right.
And he completely lost his shit. But
that's what makes us human, isn't it?
Right.
It's those interactions.
Yeah, so I encourage
people. You're imagining, I take it that you're all imagining that I'm standing here in my mahogany-laden office with, you know, very impressive law books behind me and a nice desk and lamp, whereas the truth is I'm standing here in an old T-shirt,
yep.
trackies with a mug of coffee.
Fantastic.
With papers all strewn.
And you know, the other thing is, if you're a smoker, John, you could be out in the backyard having a ciggy as well, you know.
Mac, I'm not sure we should be advocating smoking at this time of the virus.
Exactly.
Now's the time to give up.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Macca and Paul coming to you live from the Joy studio. John Pizzuto is our guest, and I've actually got a couple of funny messages here. You'll like this, John. You're a gay radio station. I hope you're doing the show in the nude. No, we're not.
Goodness, that would not be good for radio.
No, that would be one way for sure to clear the building. One here, listening to you at home. Fantastic to be listening in. I'm wondering whether all those people that have hoarded things at home ever get to use it. I wait, John, with some trepidation for the first house fire caused by toilet paper.
That's right. It'll be a triple ply emergency.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Well done.
Now, John, yourself, you know, you have, as an ex-Shadow Attorney General, you have some views on this. Greg Barnes, a criminal barrister, has, you know, some pretty strong views. There are calls for some prisoners to be released from Australia's prisons due to coronavirus, particularly those older folk, because they are most at risk, although not the only ones at risk, because we've seen infection rising in younger people. Prisons, to me, would seem to be a place that it's going to be fairly easy for this virus to spread. So what are your views?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting topic. And I think for governments, not only here in Victoria, but probably around the world, and I think we've seen some riots in Italy,
yeah,
and possibly elsewhere during the week, it's potentially a powder keg. And what I think the government should be doing, if it's not already, in fairness to it, it may be looking at these sorts of things, is a couple of things. First of all, do they have alternative venues that can operate as secure facilities if they have to isolate people? Where, for example, you've got people who remain a risk to the community if they were released early,
yeah,
but nevertheless need isolation. You can't, in all good conscience, keep people in a situation where either their health or the health of other inmates is jeopardised. They might need, a bit like what they've done on the hospital front, they've unleashed a range of dormant health facilities in Geelong and Melbourne, elsewhere in Victoria, to free up bed capacity. They might need to do something similar in this respect. That might not be easy, but that's certainly one thing. One area in addition where they might be able to ease some of the burden to either minimise risks or deal with isolation issues is potentially for low-level offenders who are just on the cusp of securing parole. I mean, that might be open to government, particularly, or the authorities rather. It might be, for example, in the case where you've got inmates who are not, you know, in custodial settings because they've committed, you know, serious violence offences, but have committed other offences where their release early, one, is likely under present parole conditions, and two, wouldn't represent another type of threat to the community. You could release them. So there are things that governments can and should be looking at. And I know they are, to be fair to them. I know there's a lot of thought being put into this particular question, because if you've got an outbreak inside a facility, that creates not only an immediate problem for the people affected, but for the whole system.
And, you know, the incredible pressure that would put, the additional pressure that it would put on the health system,
John, a question. Have we had any instances internationally that we can call on from an experience about where this has happened, perhaps in Italy or Spain, where they've had to contend with this issue?
What I know of the international experience is that once you have a ride, it's a very difficult situation to manage because, as you can appreciate, what happens when there's a riot? You need corrections officers to go in there and quell the riot. So to quell the riot, if that's what eventuates, you've got to put people who are not presently subject to the virus potentially being sick, if that's what's happened, in there. So not only do inmates and corrections staff face the possibility of physical injury, there's also the very real possibility that that kind of physical interaction is going to expose correction staff and other inmates to the risk of contracting a virus. And that's what everybody is apprehensive about, because we've seen in the last few years examples of riots in corrections facilities. And it's something we don't often talk about because it's one of those realities we just hope will be managed and won't, erupt. But in a setting like a correction setting, if you get an en masse uprising, it is very difficult for staff to quell that, that uprising in the setting. So I think what's important here, and I think what comes out as a lesson from the Italian experience, is that if you can't assure staff and the inmate population that measures are in place, you run the risk of eruptions of riots or violence in those facilities. So there needs to be an assurance, not only to us as the community, but to the inmates in those facilities, that they're not going to be exposed to the risk of virus. So you can see there's a kind of a very delicate balance that governments and authorities have to step gingerly through to make sure the place doesn't erupt. And that's I think, the lesson that people are drawing out of the Italian experience.
Yeah. Now, it can't... decisions on this can't be political. We've seen this morning that there's been a bit of politics played here, and I'm sorry to say this because I don't agree with it. It's a bit of a general statement from a colleague of yours, Michael O'Brien, the opposition leader. He says he opposed any moves to release prisoners early. If you do the crime, you do the time. Okay, good headline, mate. But actually consider that there are some people in prison that have done non-violent, non-community threatening offences that it would be possible to release, and particularly if they're in a high-risk group, would save us some money. It reduces the risk of if the infection gets into the system. I'd like to think that, government and opposition look at this absolutely on the basis of what is going to be best for community health, and not just a headline from either side. Because if we get a breakout in a prison, it's going to be, pretty serious, pretty serious. We actually had a question from a listener, John. John is of Italian heritage. Do you have any family in Italy, or what information are you getting about what's going on in Italy yourself?
I haven't spoken to my relatives. We have relatives in north and south.
Yep.
In the north, in Lombardy, the area that's in lockdown, we have relatives there. We don't have anybody yet who's contracted it, but there's just a level of apprehension that makes ours as real and understandable as our own is. Over there, it's just at an epicenter, you can imagine. So, thinking very much of our loved ones over there who haven't yet been touched by it, but Italy will take generations to get over this, what we're hearing from our relatives over there. But, touch wood.
It's been quite severe. John, you just mentioned the word lockdown there, and we have had another message in from one of our regular listeners with a two-part question, really, is why are some schools, particularly independents, choosing to close while others are remaining open? And then if it does get to lockdown, when will that happen, in your opinion? And what will that actually mean?
Yeah. Look, I think this has been a really tough question for schools. Our daughters go to an independent secondary school. They've remained open till next week. But my own view, in response to our listener's question, is I think schools should have been shut down. I've been a fan of if I can say fan, of the go hard and go early school of thought. So I think they should have. But let's remember, it's been really difficult because, let's face it, in the government and independent sector, you've had schools remain open and you've had state government and federal government advice to all schools that they should remain open. So I would avoid trying to differentiate between what government and independent schools have been doing on this front, because they've made really agonising decisions, and you can feel it. We get updates from our school, you know, several times a day over the last couple of weeks. We've been getting those messages, and you can see that they are just constantly on this and trying to work out what is the best thing. My own view as a parent, forgetting all the other things I do, just as a parent, I've wanted schools to be shut just so that we can go in lockdown and on that front and just try to stem the spread of this, no matter how it emerges. So I think on that, you've got to be, I think, fair to both government and independent schools, and they're, I think, acting very genuinely and in good faith to try and do the best thing. I think the shutting schools now has kind of been answered. I think those schools that have wanted to stay open in the government and independent sector have just been like a marathon runner, just wanting to get to the end. Now we're at the end of term one next week, and I think they're just staggering over the line to get there as quickly as they can. And we've had the announcement, I think, overnight of curriculum days, which shortened the week even further. So I think, you know, it should have happened a while ago, but thank goodness it's going to happen soon anyway.
And just in terms of lockdown, John, what is in your definition, what does lockdown actually mean, and when is it going to hit Melbourne or Australia?
I would hope it wouldn't, but the numbers, Paul, that keep coming out, I think we've had this morning, I'm trying to track the figures as they come out on Twitter, but I think we had 58 cases overnight. So yeah, the numbers seem to be growing. And the hope, of course, is that with social distancing, we can quell that growth, but it doesn't seem to be happening just yet. Hopefully it will. What does lockdown look like? I think it's going to continue to be incremental, which, you know, in one way is a bit of a shame because, as I said, a lot of people, and I'm just one of them, are beginning to think that maybe, you know, harder and sooner is better to go. But,
yeah,
you know, at some point we're going to see, you know, possibly on a suburb-by-suburb basis, people being effectively ordered under public health legislation and federal government legislation to basically stay inside and not go out unless there's a necessary reason to do so. And if it gets to that stage, and let's hope that it doesn't, but if it gets to that stage, it's going to be as drastic as that. And in addition, I think at some point, sorry, Mac, I think the other thing is that I can foresee at some point soon there are going to be edicts around the dispensing of basic food and sanitary products in supermarkets.
Now, you'd know, John, the chief medical officer under the legislation in Victoria and also federally has enormous power.
Mm.
And in a lot of ways, well, in many ways, has more power than the police, in terms of directing people how they can behave. Obviously, the police can stop you breaking the law, but the chief medical officer has enormous power, and, you know, I hope it's not necessary, but I think ultimately that power is going to be deployed in all sorts of ways. It might be around shopping. It might be, around how you work and where you work from and all those sort of things. So I think we need to acknowledge that we are, you know, this is developing. There is going to be a lot of pain and a lot of angst for us. As long as we're kept informed as to what's happening and why it's happening, I think that goes a long way, to mitigating people's fear. Look, we've got to go, John. We are going to be speaking to you, you know, a lot more, I'm sure of that.
John, just before we wrap up there, what's your final thoughts on the next stages of announcements that we're going to get?
I think for me, what I want to see is a bit more around what each of us is expected to do and can do to support each other. I know that's a very general statement, but even things like how we can help businesses continue to operate, continue to employ people, and we're getting a lot of messages, as we would expect to, around general things like travel bans, which are very important, mind you. But I think what's going to help people a lot, particularly where we started our conversation in terms of our own well-being and how we feel about our own position, the position of our loved ones, our friends and our community, we're going to start to need some more granular guidance, I think, for a lot of people about what they can do to reach out for some support. Because let's face it, was it last weekend, I think, if I'm not mistaken, or was it 2 weeks? I think it was last weekend, where this really turned, right?
Yeah.
We went from this is a big issue, but, and all of a sudden you heard this big thud, and all of a sudden it was all different. And we've only been a week into that, and I think for a lot of people, as we started our conversation, a lot of people are going to be feeling that, and that kind of support is going to be really important.
It is. John, thank you for your time this morning. Thanks for, you know, giving us a nice insight, but, you know, also a very reasonable perspective on how things are. It's much appreciated. We're going to speak to you again. We're going to speak to you again soon, mate.
Stay well, everyone. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers, John. Thank you.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.